This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Anderson Hospital, a Newsweek World's Best Hospital. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It's one of our favorite hours of the week. I don't know if it's his or not. I think it is. The Cardinals manager, Oliver Marmol, is with us. It's the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. And we say good afternoon to the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, Ollie Marmol. Afternoon, Ollie.
Afternoon. I'm not sure if I could put this one as a favorite, but it's up there.
Oh, come on. You love it.
You do enjoy.
You love it.
You do enjoy. And I do reiterate that this was, you know, part of Ollie's idea, really. We got together in spring training. I remember standing outside the clubhouse with you in spring training, and you said, you know, I have an idea for our segment that we do. We were doing Sundays, and we ended up here it was. We all collaborated, Bernie, you, me, Steve Moore, and I know we still have a show to go here, but I just wanted to say I think this has gone well. I mean, I think it's been received very well by the fans. Ollie, I think you probably feel that as well.
Yeah, I think it's a better format for a lot of reasons. I think we dive into things that happen in a game a little bit more detail. You guys each have your own viewpoints of how the game went, and therefore it's just different angles. And if you think about our fan base, they don't all see the game the same way. So I'd rather receive questions from the three of you. And there's days where we can just talk about something that happened. There's days you can question a move, and I can give my reasoning behind it, and people can form their own opinions as to if they like it or not. So I like this format. I like the personalities on it. So I think it's played well.
Well, we appreciate that. Let me lead things off by just saying the 11-6 yesterday, and just get your overview of what happened there late to that bullpen.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because when you think about how this has played out over the last, call it, couple months, that game usually takes place after we've won two games, because we've emptied out our pen to do so, right? That means Leahy's not available, Swanson's not available, Riley's not available. What's disappointing about this one is that we coughed that one up the other day when we used our guys, just because, I mean, JoJo and Riley have been so good. And both of them had an off day on the same day, and we lose that game. So this one feels a little worse going into yesterday's game, because you don't have any of those guys available. You know you're going to have to close out the game with a combination of Roycroft, Graceffo, Fernandez. And in an ideal world, and I said this in the post game, man, I didn't want to use Leahy for more than one inning. He's pitched a lot. He's done his job. It's not his fault that he has to take multiples in a day where he shouldn't. But that was the game there with Fernandez on the mound. I felt like if we let it play out, that would have been a much bigger inning if I don't bring Leahy in there. So we took our shot to try to keep it within one, and he was able to. So at the end of the day, that group of guys that we use usually when we're down, right? If you remove the Riley, JoJo, Swanson, Leahy, that second half of the pen, they're going to receive a lot of opportunity, and it's going to be up to them to step up and kind of run with it, man. Alcala's, the Fernandez, Roycroft's, Graceffo's, because we've rotated them through in that down two, sometimes tied, if guys aren't available, up one situation. And we're waiting on that one guy to step up and show that they're capable of throwing those type of innings. So we'll continue to rotate through them and go from there. But yesterday was an unfortunate loss.
Yeah, Ollie, I wanted to follow up on Leahy, and I caught your post game, and I could tell it really bothered. You were really bothered by the fact you kind of extended him so much in that game. And from an overview standpoint, I mean, this is something I've been thinking about, not just because of last night, but he's thrown more innings than any Cardinal reliever since Dave Veers in 2002, and he's going to actually go past him. And I got to confess, man, I'm concerned that maybe he's been overused, or there might be some repercussions about pushing him so hard.
No, because this has been 100% planned. If you look at, go back 2 months if you like, Bern, and I can show you on our spreadsheet how we keep track of it. But we've basically done the same thing with him and Swanson, where if we pitch him, we don't use him for one inning. We use him for multiples because it's easier than going back to back, right? It's easier for a pitcher to throw two innings than throw one inning today and then recover and throw one inning tomorrow, all right? So that's where the innings and appearances tend to become a lot on a pitcher and the wear and tear, and then you put them at risk of injury. So what we've done with both of those guys, if you notice, is we use them for multiple innings every time. So we'll use Swanson for two innings. We'll use Leahy for two innings. And then we alternate whether we give them 2 days rest or 3 days rest. So that's where if Swanson throws two and a third and he has 3 days rest, that means Leahy's going to have 2 days rest after throwing two innings. And then we flip them. And one of them will get 3 days rest. The other one will get 2 days rest. And what we're trying to do is actually up the workload while increasing the rest in order for him to have an opportunity to start next year and have a bulk of innings to build off of. So when you're looking at him as a reliever, that's fair to make that comment. But we are looking at – he's not being used as a regular reliever. I mean, if you look at the rest days in between and the multiples, he's being used almost like a piggyback every second or third day just in order for us to bridge to our back end but also build the bulk for him to be a starter next year or have the opportunity to compete for it and have a workload of somewhere around 90 innings as the base to build off of.
I just wanted to follow up and actually by telling you, you know, your system is working. Yeah. I mean, the last 2 years, I mean, the Cardinals have been a top five bullpen in the major leagues over the 2 year period. So what you and the plan that you and Dusty Blake have come up with has obviously been very successful despite some personnel changes and bodies in, bodies out. So I do recognize that, but I don't know. I guess I tend to be a worrywart about certain things. So
that's why I admit it yesterday. Yesterday was the first time I used him in a way I didn't want to use him, right? And he was used no different than any other club would use him, to be quite honest with you. If you start looking at workloads throughout the league and you look at how we've used our relievers throughout the league, there is a difference there. And there's also a difference in injuries and there's a difference in a lot of other things. But like – yesterday was the first day where I went into that game going, I'm going to try like hell to use him for just one inning today, and it'll be to close the game. And when it starts to get sideways, you take your shot knowing that we may not get to the ninth unless he throws right here. But from a workload standpoint, he's actually in a really good position, not only to finish off this year, but to position himself as a starter next year. Yeah.
So with Leahy and Swanson, if you've got ideas of potentially starting them in 2026, do you already have an idea of how many innings you think they could give you if it ends up that they do make the rotation?
So I'd like to keep Leahy in that conversation and not okay. butt him up with Swanson. Swanson is a workload management thing, not so much to build the bulk for next year starting as much as just keep him from having to go on back-to-back days, because that's the recovery that jacks pitchers up is just when you start using them back to back three in a row, and especially when you use them back to back and that second day you use them for multiples, that's really tough on a guy. And we try to stay away from that as well. At some times it makes me have to answer questions that suck because like, man, why didn't you use this guy in this situation? It's like, cause I'd like to have him next week as well. But for Leahy, if we end the year right in that 90-ish range, then you can add 20% of a workload to that going into next year, and he can give you a decent amount of innings. But that's what we're building towards, is just giving him an opportunity to be able to do that. Yeah.
Michael McGreevy, your starting pitcher tonight, and we have seen a pattern of McGreevy bouncing back from rockier outings, haven't we? That's probably the sign of growth.
It is. And how he, if you look at the usage last time, Dusty – kind of we sat down and walked through this quite a bit. There is a big difference. You look at his AAA numbers, you look at his big league numbers, and he was relying on two pitches heavily in the sinker and the slider. And his last outing against righties, he mixed that cutter, curveball, and the four-seam fastball in quite a bit. And he has to be that style of pitcher that just has variability. Like he has so much to offer you that you can't eliminate a pitch or sit on a pitch or a certain part of the zone in order to attack him. So the more he's throwing at you, the harder and more difficult, the more soft contact. He's not a big-time swing and miss guy, so you have to throw your full mix to righties. And he did a much better job of that last outing, and it led to more success.
Well, Nolan Arenado's had a tough year, but he came back last night, looked really good. But the secondary issue here would be, okay, what does this mean for Nolan Gorman? I know there's only 11 games left, but I think
sure.
We don't know. And listen, hypothetical questions are kind of BS. I realize that, but we don't know what the situation will be in 2026, whether Nato will still be here or not. But if he's the third baseman, you know, does Gorman have a role? Does he have a regular home? Like, I just, if you could talk about that a little bit.
So I'll talk about what the rest of this season will look like, and then I'll try to answer a little bit of the second question there. So Nato's return means Nolan Gorman's time at third is very, very limited. My goal for the next 2 weeks is to play Nato as much as possible, as much as his body will allow him to play, and go from there. I've sat down with Gorman, and we've walked through, hey, while he was gone, we gave a large opportunity of at-bats and playing time at third base in order for you to capitalize on it. And here's what the next 2 weeks are going to look like. If I can slide him into third and give Nato an off day, or slide him into the DH and give Herrera a day, I'll do that. But it's going to dramatically impact his playing time over the next 11 games. And moving forward, it's hard to discuss that as far as if Nato's back or if he's not or what that plan looks like. But if he's back, I mean, there's going to be some real competition, because it's not like JJ didn't have a really good year down below either, right? So that's where competition's a beautiful thing. And you'll go into spring with that idea.
And I wanted to follow up. And again, I know there's only 11 games left. And I also know Arenado coming back, it's actually in the team's best interest to play him, because, again, this isn't your area. But, you know, if he plays 10 strong games, looks really good, perhaps more teams would be interested in him. At least they know he's healthy and he's looking good. So I really do get that. But doesn't it sort of go against the whole runway season concept for Gorman to basically, you know, have to go take a seat for the final couple weeks of the season?
Not if you want to create it for next year.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you want to create even more runway for next year, Nato has to prove that he's healthy. And that's part of it. I mean, that's his return. He's shown that he's strong and his body's in a good spot. Because if it does head in that direction where he is moved, he has to show that he's actually baseball ready and moving well and doing what his body needs to do. So, I think, hey, listen, when we talk about runway, we've given a lot of guys opportunity over the last several months to show what they're capable of. These next 11 games, Nato is healthy, and we're going to run him out there every day as long as his body can handle it.
You touched on that last night during your post game about, you know, you've got to, and I'm paraphrasing, that you've got to give guys opportunities and they have to take advantage of the opportunities they are given. And so with this being that runway season and there only being 11 games left, what value is there in these final 11 to helping you make those evaluations for next year? Or do you already feel like you kind of know what you've got?
No, you're still evaluating. I mean, you're still no different than 2 weeks ago. You're still putting guys in situations. Yesterday was a great example, using the relievers. If our main guys are down, that's a great opportunity for some of those guys to start to show that they're capable. And there's not much time left, but you're still wanting to see how they respond. Like, evaluating McGreevy's ability to change his usage in order to do what he did his last outing against righties and show that he's capable of doing that is great. So today's no different for him. Continuing to evaluate that's important and making adjustments for his following start. So no, you can't waste any of these days. I think they're all important.
Ollie Marmol's with us. Our conversation with him sponsored by Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer. We'll take a quick break, come back, and have a second segment with the skipper right after this. It is the Gas House Gang on the home of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Now the windup, the 2-2 pitch, and a one-hopper up the middle, knocked down by Mason Wynn, who throws on one hop. He got him! Wynn from the outfield grass threw on a hop to first base. A good dig by Burleson. That's the way our game begins in St. Louis.
Wow, what a talent he is. Mason Wynn at shortstop. Ollie Marmol, Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, Tom Ackerman. It's the Gas House Gang. Ollie, you can throw all the defensive metrics out there you want. The numbers, the defensive war, this, that, on Mason Wynn. I'll give you one number, and that is three. He committed only three errors all season. He is, if not a lock for the Gold Glove, I don't know who else is. And while you're answering that, take us into what he's gone through here over the last few months with a painful knee.
Man, I love the fact that he continued to post every day. And we had a lot of conversations around this. He felt very comfortable that, okay, this isn't going to get worse. We already know we're going to get it scoped out when the year's over. It doesn't impact my offseason in any way, whether I do it today or I do it last day of the season. And as long as we still have a shot, I want to go out there every day for my team. And that tells you a lot about a young player. It says a lot to that clubhouse as far as how we need to operate. As far, there's going to be times where you're not 100%. And if you're not at risk of further injury, man, let's go. Like, you're our best shot. Let's keep going. And I love the fact that he has that mentality. He was emotional in my office when we had to pull the plug and say, listen, we're going to call it a year for you, because he's a competitor and he doesn't want to ever stop. I love that. Like, those are the type of players you want a ton of, those type of guys. But yeah, he was playing through some pain, and it's something that is in and out, right? You can feel good for four innings. You take a jab step and it shoots up your knee and you feel it for 1 or 2 minutes. And that's when you see him limping, and then it goes away. And it's just a constant, just back and forth there. But what he was able to do this year is so impressive, because we talk about it on the other side of the ball a lot, man. Like, Me and Albert will talk about this all the time. Every year of his career, he wanted to give away less and less at-bats. He talked about, like, man, I feel like I gave away 15 at-bats last year. I want to get that down a single digit. Like, I just want to give away less and less at-bats every year. Well, on the defensive side, being able to focus for every pitch of a game is very difficult. And we do a review where we get the overhead camera of the entire game, and we watch guys and their jumps. And you actually want to see their jumps sometimes on just foul balls, to see if they're reacting in the right direction on a foul ball. It'll let you know how engaged they are on every pitch, even if it's not coming to them, right? So let's say there's a left-handed hitter, and you're looking at Walker in right field, and the guy fouls it off towards left field. Is Walker breaking and taking that first step? It lets you know how engaged they are, right? For Mason to lock in every single pitch, that's the only way you only make three errors in a year. You have to be so dialed in and focused on every single play of the game, and not give anything away, because you don't know when that one pitch and that one ball is coming to you. So I'm proud of the focus, the attention to detail, and the preparation, because even when his knee was jacked up, he was out there taking ground balls and making sure he was prepared every day. Now, he shortened the workload and the intensity of how he prepped, but he stuck to his routine. And it just says, like, once you find a routine that works, you make adjustments along the way, but man, don't veer from it. And this guy did a tremendous job of doing that.
Just a follow up, but you know, Mason Wynn, despite playing hurt for quite a while, he's going to end up leading your team in wins above replacement. And it's not even going to be close. It just shows you the value he has with his defense and his base running. But what I wanted to ask you is, how much did the knee problem factor into his offense, especially the slug? Like, his slugging percentage was down quite a bit. Was his base affected to the point where it maybe made it more difficult for him to drive the ball?
Possibly, because the days it was barking, you would see some of the swing and miss, and he'd fall back on that backside, and you could tell, like, he was favoring it a little bit. So it would be naive for us to think that it didn't impact it to some degree. That's why I think, and I've said it a couple times, when you look at Mason, he had a good year, very good year defensively, good year offensively, and the ceiling is so high for him, because he can do a little bit of everything. This guy could slug, he can hit you 15, 20 homers, he could drive the baseball the other way, he can take his knocks, he's got a really, really good two-strike approach. There's just a lot of ways he can beat you, and he's only going to get better on the bases as far as being able to steal bases and be aggressive there. He already does a really nice job of scoring from first, second to home, first to third, that type of thing. He was limited in taking risks stealing bags because of just the pressure it puts on that knee. But I think once that thing's ready to go, he's aggressive and he doesn't fear a whole lot. So we have a really good player on our hands. We really do.
Mason Wynn's case is a little bit different in terms of the injury. He could not have made it worse by playing, but how do you know when to save a player from himself? Because guys are always going to want to be gamers. They're going to want to be known as somebody who goes out there, even if they're banged up, they're going to play, they're going to be there for their teammates. But sometimes, you know, you might have to step in and make sure they don't make whatever it is worse. How do you know when to do that?
Yeah, like I have a torn meniscus right now. And I know exactly what that felt like. I did it playing in, I think, 08, 09. And I understood kind of what he was feeling on a day-to-day basis. And he communicated with me so well that we never felt like we needed to do that. It got to the point, once it wasn't recovering as well, and we got to Seattle and he felt like a little bit of the cold weather, he's like, man, I don't know what's going on, but it's just not loosening up as it normally does by the time I get to this part of my day. That's when I knew I wanted to keep a closer eye on it. And then once we gave him multiple days and we got to Milwaukee, we've had the same exact feeling. That's when you just make the call for him. And he hated it. but at that point, if it's not recovering to the degree that it was the previous month, then even with off days, then you just make the call. But you have to do that for other guys from time to time. Like Contreras isn't in there today. And he didn't love it, but guess what? Like he needs to take a day and make sure that bicep lets up a little bit and we're not dealing with that in the next couple of days. So you make the call as necessary. But with Mason, I felt like it was as important for that clubhouse to see him do what he did on a daily basis moving forward, and he did a tremendous job of it.
How did Brendan Donovan bounce back from what was a slow recovery? Those were his words to get back from his injury.
Yeah, he's still not 100%, but again, he feels good enough to finish the year, and we'll be smart about the quick turnarounds of night, day, and that type of thing, depending on how he's recovering the previous day. But yeah, this is another guy who played through quite a bit. Still feeling it a little bit, but not nearly as much. I mean, the rest and the stuff that he did during that time down really helped.
Donnie was your Roberto Clemente Award finalist, and I wanted to get your feelings on that. I know you pay attention and you are involved in what a lot of people do off the field, but do you encourage that in the clubhouse? And do players talk about that, getting out there?
Yeah, they do. Actually, one of the people that her name's Melody Yond. Mm-hmm. She works for us and she does a really nice job of creating these opportunities for fans using the players. And she came up to me a week ago and she made a really good comment. She said, man, more than any year, these guys have done a tremendous job of just being available to the community, regardless of what we ask them. They not only attend, but like they're engaged they seem like they enjoy it. And that's credit to that group, man, because we have been given an incredible platform. The salaries are what they are. You have to grind and be focused on the year in order to stay afloat and just survive in this league. But man, you do have opportunities to take a step back from time to time and just figure out like, how do I help? What do people need? What community is in need right now? And how can I step in and just make a difference? Because the platform we've been given is incredible. And, I've always felt that if you're not using it for that type of stuff, man, you're missing an incredible opportunity and you'll regret it down the road. So I encourage guys as much as possible to, man, take a step back and understand the platform you've been given and find ways to, just in practical ways, just help people, fill a need, see what's out there and just figure out a way to just step in. So our group has done a really nice job of that. Donnie's very, very cognizant of it. So very deserving for sure.
Ali, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask it anyway. No surprise that Libby had to, you know, push through some things. First time starter, full season. You know, we get that. But I would imagine you and Dusty and everybody else feels really good about taking him forward in that role. And what do you anticipate he'll do in the offseason? Maybe that he understands the routine now fully, and maybe there are some physical things, some training things he can do. Talk to us about how does he improve just getting into 2026, being better prepared now that he knows what it's like?
A lot of it is workload related with the training room, performance staff, and you nailed it. Those are the areas that we'll target because over the last – one of the reasons we wanted to plow through this month, and at times it seemed like, what are you guys doing? I mean, just call it a year for him, is teach his body exactly what's needed. So you look at yesterday's game, there's some differences in the weight room and with our performance staff that we're able to target over the in between starts. And this is dating back a couple starts now. But yesterday, I believe his average velo was what he held was 94.6 or so. And he hasn't done that since June 23rd, right? So like we're close to almost his last start of the season, and he's doing something he hasn't done since June, which tells you his body can handle it, but you can't get there unless you plow through some of the dead period. And we were able to do that and also target some things for him this offseason that are going to tremendously help him. So I'm glad we did. At times it doesn't look great and it sucks, but you have to understand what the end game is and setting yourself up for success down the road. So our group, meaning performance staff, Dusty, and that entire department have done a really nice job of really pinpointing and individualizing things for these guys, and Libby fits into that big time. Yeah.
We have a loyal listener, Lauren. How about that alliteration? She asked a number of questions, and one of them is about Yadier Molina, who spent some time in your dugout this season. Yes. She wants to know if he's coming back before the homestand is over.
He actually texted me while we were on the show, so I'll respond here in a minute. I'm trying to get him down here one more time. That's my goal. I said it last week. I'm hoping it's for the last three games here. So we're trying to figure out if we can make it happen or not. So as soon as I hang up with you guys, I'll dial him in.
All right. He's going to be managing the World Baseball Classic. So looking forward to seeing what he does. This is one. Any more surprises coming up from the minors? I don't know if you can name names, but do you have
here?
Do you have anybody left that you have an eye on? You don't have to name names here. Can I throw a name? I'm not saying call them up, but did you? I saw that the Cardinals had their minor league pitcher of the month. My guy Luis Gastelum. Remember when I told you in spring training how much I love that kid? Is a beast. I mean, he is awesome. But he's at Double A Springfield. I like Gastelum a lot.
No, I do. That was a good call. That was early on in spring too. Yeah. No, as Scout. Don't go too far now, Bernie.
Yeah. Stay in your lane, Ackerman.
No, I mean at this point, a lot of this is just roster movement stuff, and above me in the sense of going into the offseason, what you want to do from a roster standpoint. And here's what I will say: one of the worst things you can do. I get equally as excited as you, Tom, when it comes to these young guys coming up and just seeing what they're capable of doing. But one of the worst things you can do is bring somebody up when they're not ready. And it could set them back big time. I even think about Leahy. He fits into this where he came up and had I believe it was in Chicago, did not go well for him. And him coming back from that took way longer than we would have liked. And it set him back a little bit. So you have to be smart about when you bring a guy up, if they're ready, and then if they can mentally handle not doing well out the gate. And these are all things you consider before making that move. But as of right now, we're going to stay put. Yes.
If I can throw something in since we're talking about this, because it is a fun subject and it's a positive subject, because these young guys are going to be a big part of the Cardinals' future. Man, this season that Joshua Baez has had at Double A, and the Cardinals drafted him out of high school. Just for our listeners, they drafted him out of high school in Massachusetts in 2021, a year after Walker was drafted. So he had a lot of growing pains, but all of a sudden it just came together. And I'm not saying the guy's going to be Mickey Mantle, when you see a guy who doesn't strike out much, he's drawing walks, he's stolen over 50 bags this year, and he hits bombs. That sounds pretty good to me. I don't know what his ETA is, but that sounds. Have you ever had a chance to watch him or talk to people about him?
Yes, I have, and the growing pains were real. And this is where that's what the minor leagues is for, man. To be able to go through that in an environment where you can continue to grind and find progress without the overhead of people just breathing down your throat because the game matters that much, right? So you want to have that happen down below. You want him to have success. You also want him to get beat up along the way and see how he handles it and make adjustments. And but he's coming along. And there's, to your point, the combination of speed and power, but also controlling the strike zone. Like, that's a great combo. And the more of those, the better. So I'm with you on that one.
Right.
12:36, we have reached our limit here. We want to make sure you get on that call with Yachty as well. And
you want to put him on speaker?
Yeah. Let us know what's up.
I'm sure. Just do it now. I'm sure that'll play well.
if he's coming, give us a heads up. We'll pass.
No, I'll let you guys know if we can pull this off. But hopefully for the last three.
All right. Thanks for the visit. As always, have a great game tonight against the Reds.
All right.
Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producer is Matt Pajeski right here in studio. We just spoke with the manager, Ollie Marmol. Bernie, your reaction to the skipper? He had a very open segment, I thought, with us, both segments.
No, I enjoyed him explaining his usage of Kyle Leahy. And, you know, as I sort of conveyed when I asked him the question, I was concerned that maybe Leahy's pitching too much because 31 of his appearances have been for more than one inning. And there's only one reliever in the major. Well, Leahy leads the National League in innings pitch and a lot of other categories like batter's face, things like that. So I do worry because I've seen relievers break when they're used too much. And I am concerned about that. I conveyed that to Ollie. But in all candor, I should have told him this because he would have left because he likes this kind of stuff. I was kind of going bananas last night. In fact, texting with Kevin Wheeler and Matt Pauly, just saying, what's going on here? I mean, is Ollie going to wait till the dude's arm falls off? Come on.
Yeah, that was
It was hard to watch. But see, that's what's valuable about having this forum, because I can take my concern and say, here's my concern. You know, are you working him too much? And then he can explain the system that he set up. And after hearing the explanation of the system, actually, the way he's going about this makes sense. It does. So I've learned something. It doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with everything that he says, but I've learned something. And I know yesterday we were fussing on Redbird Rush Hour about, it sounds like Arenado, no matter what, will always play. And this was more about next season if he's back. There's only 11 games now in this season. But I was fussing quite a bit. And I sent a text message about this because I was curious. And the thing of it is, I think next year, if Arenado's still here, you know, the idea that he'll play no matter what, no matter how bad he is, he'll play, he'll be the starter. I would have a problem with that. And I know some of our listeners are probably saying, well, why didn't you confront him on it? Well, it's because we're not into next year yet. Mm-hmm. And this year, I totally understand why it makes sense to play Arenado, because he's got to show, and the Cardinals have to show, that he's back on the field. He looks good. He's physically sound. And that part is no longer a concern. But there's always stuff about Ollie that I want to ask him about. And he always answers this question straight on. I mean, people will say that he ducks it. The only time he ducks a question, he's not really ducking a question, because the question will be geared to something that is not his decision. So why would he sit on our station or even talking to the media herd down at the game in a way that would be basically criticizing the front office? I mean, that's just stupid to expect any manager to do that. They don't do that. So if he dodges, that's why he dodges.
No, that's understandable. And speaking of the front office, a lot of people commenting on Bloom. Joseph says he could see Bloom trading for a young, controllable starting power pitcher that we really don't know a lot about, and a veteran starter also. Well, I'm all for that. I mean, yeah. If I'm Bloom, Bernie, that's what I'm doing right away. I'm addressing this rotation. You cannot go through another year with a rotation like we just saw.
Well, I guess some of this also depends on what they really think next year is going to be, right?
Yeah, I think regardless, you got to have some stable starting so that you can see what else you have in your bullpen. You can't go through these, and but not to mention offense. You have to have even if you're not a good team in terms of roster of talent, you have to have some sort of base of rotation so that your offense isn't down five runs in the first inning. You know,
right?
They need a lot. Next year is going to be a rebuild, and it's going to be. It's going to be a slow rebuild. The Chaim Bloom era is going to be totally different, because he's going to come right out and tell people exactly what he plans to do, and he's not going to try to finesse it and then try to convince the fans that they're going to try to win when, you know, actually it's not going to be set up that way to win immediately, but it's overdue. They need to do it. And Bloom, with his work in draft and development and the way he rebuilt that entire Red Sox farm system, and he did it in a very quick fashion, that team that's having an unexpectedly good year is just loaded with Heim Bloom draft picks, but also Garrett Crotchet, the starting pitcher, he was acquired with Heim Bloom draft picks that were selected by Boston. So this is the way it's going to be, and that's the way Bill DeWitt wants it. But I think people are going to have to just kind of retrain their minds a little about what to expect for next season, because it's really obvious what's going to happen. And the Cardinals need to get out of the middle. They're not fully committed to winning, not fully committed to going with youth, kind of trying to stay in the middle of both things. And if you stay in the middle of both things and you don't pick a direction and go hard to that direction, then you have no direction. And I think they're going to take a direction next year.
I do think they had some surprises. I think Raniel Rodriguez was a good one in the minor leagues. I think, as you mentioned, Baez. So they had, that's sort of why that farm system went up to ninth, according to Kylie McDaniel of ESPN, from 19th, is they had some unexpected performances, and that's good for Heim. I mean, that does count, in because he was overseeing the minor league system and its resourcefulness, which will continue in the hands of Rob Cerfolio and Larry Day as he elevates himself, Heim does, to the big league club. So that's really big. We got a lot of comments that have come through. I want to make sure we're getting some here. We get the one or the other. It's like, I hope Ollie's gone, and then I hope Ollie gets extended. I mean, it's like, you know.
So which is it?
They're all over the place in this. You know, that I just, to go back, I feel like we talk about this all the time, but we're going to save it for our last segment. The future of Ollie Marmol and this coaching staff, and for that matter, the managerial future of Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols.
Now back to the Gashouse Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling and by Anderson Hospital on 104.1 FM KMOX.
I don't want to speculate who's on the hot seat in Major League Baseball and which managerial openings could happen here in the next couple of weeks.
Why not?
I'm pretty sure, because I really don't know for sure which teams are going to fire which managers, but I'm pretty sure Albert Pujols' name is going to come up. And I'm fairly certain that Yachty's name will come up. Jeff Miller wanted to ask Ollie if Albert wants an opportunity to sit in the dugout as well. I think, Bernie, it's an interesting question. I mean, Albert's already made it public that he wants to be a manager. Ollie's aware of Yachty's aspirations to be a manager. Do you need to spend a year in a dugout before you become a major league manager? I don't know.
I don't think so, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Because the managing job has changed dramatically, because you collaborate with the front office. You know, when Tony La Russa retired, I called him the last of the Lions, because other than him and Bruce Bochy and maybe Tito Francona a little bit, the day of the all-powerful, superpower, you know, leader of men, leader of a franchise manager, those days are long over. And managers today are expected, and they do all work very closely with the front office, making decisions, including lineups. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why so many fans still don't understand that, you know, because that's the way it's been now for quite a long time. So, no, I don't think a guy like Albert Pujols, with his vast experience and great leadership skills and the fact he loves young players and likes to mentor them and work with them, I think he's ready to manage from day one. I think Yadier Molina is too. Sorry.
Yeah, I do too, 100%. And, Chris, you know, people are going to have to be prepared around here for the fact that one or both of them could be managing uniform.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen Albert in two different uniforms, Angels, Dodgers. We haven't seen Yadi in another uniform. So that would be pretty jarring for people, but it could very well happen.
And it could work one of two ways. It could be that maybe it's actually better for everybody involved if they do go somewhere else, because right now, and I think they always are going to be, gods here, both of those guys. But if they ever did end up managing a team where the roster wasn't very good and that team didn't do very well, maybe your opinions start to change of them a little bit. So maybe it would be better for them to go somewhere else. I know a lot of people don't like that. They want them here, but be careful what you wish for.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Angels don't hire him.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yep.
Bernie, we appreciate you very much.
Thanks for all that you do.
See you Thursday.
On the Gas House Gang. Once again, he helps out with the Redbird Rush Hour as well. That's Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our thanks to Matt Pajeski, our fine producer, and Frank Ladd, and to the manager, Ollie Marmel. We say so long, Cardinal baseball coming up tonight, 6:45. Matt Pauly will have the pregame at 5:50 in the Redbird Rush Hour. Before that, with Kevin Wheeler, this is the home of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.